This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Up next, Douglas Mann is joined by Dr. Javed Butler, professor of medicine at the Stony Brook School of Medicine in New York. They covered, does the risk for heart failure modulate the effectiveness of empagliflozin on heart failure hospitalization or cardiovascular death in patients with type 2 diabetes without heart failure, the EMPA-REG outcome trial?
So Javed, walk us through the idea behind the study and the premise behind it really came out of the results of the EMPA-REG study.
So the EMPA-REG trial, over 7,000 patients were randomized to SGLT2 inhibitor empagliflozin or placebo. The primary endpoint was a 3-point MACE, and that was significantly reduced composite of cardiovascular death, myocardial infarction, and stroke, about 15% primary endpoint reduction, about a 35% reduction in cardiovascular mortality. And then those results, you know, we also saw with another SGLT2 inhibitor, canagliflozin, CANVAS trial in diabetic patients, also a 3-point MACE reduction of about 15% or so. But what is very interesting is that patients with diabetes are also at a particularly high risk of developing heart failure. And in both these trials, though heart failure onset was not part of the primary or the composite endpoint, in both these trials, there was a 35%, very, very impressive, 35% relative risk reduction in new onset heart failure. So the question that we were trying to tackle is that if you were to ever come up with a prevention intervention, and if you give it to everybody, do you really get the same benefit, or should you target only those people at high risk? So what we did, about 90% of the patients in the EMPA-REG trial, or about 6,300, did not have heart failure at baseline. So those 10% that had heart failure, we excluded. And basically, we looked at the incidence of heart failure in those without heart failure at baseline and did that vary based on your baseline risk.
And walk us through how you assessed the baseline risk. A lot of this was the ABC risk stratification tool, which you have been one of the pioneers in.
Yeah, so we, you know, developed this, you know, we think about coronary artery disease and risk prevention quite a lot from the Framingham risk score onwards. Many other scores have come up. And this was over sort of almost a decade ago that we worried about heart failure risk prevention because not all heart failure is related to atherosclerosis. There are other pathways through which you develop heart failure. So we developed internally validated in the Health ABC cohort and then externally validated in the cardiovascular health study. So we took that score, applied it to these 6,300 plus patients who did not have heart failure in EMPA-REG and divided them into three groups. One is those at average to low risk, which is defined as less than 10% risk over the next 5 years. Those with high risk, which is 10 to 20%, and those at very high risk, which is greater than 20% risk.
With that background now, tell us what the major findings of your study were.
So about 2/3 of the patients were at average to low risk, about 1/4 of the patients were at high risk, and about 5-6% were at very high risk to begin with. The Health ABC risk score in both the placebo and the treatment arm, the distribution was about the same. And what we found was that while the absolute risk, so we normalized it for the different follow-up to 100-person-year follow-up, the absolute risk obviously went up as the risk categories went up, from about 2 to 4 to 7 per 100-person-year follow-up. But the relative risk reduction was almost the same, about a 29% statistically significant in the low to average risk and about 45% in high risk and very high risk. So we found consistency in relative risk reduction across the spectrum of baseline heart failure risk. But obviously, the absolute risk was lower in those at lower risk.
Right. Were these findings at all surprising to you as a heart failure specialist?
So they were surprising to the fact that I think the 50% reduction in the high, very high risk group, I was not particularly surprised. I mean, we have seen that in hypertension trials also. You control blood pressure, risk of heart failure goes down by 50%. But the vast bulk, like the 67% of the patients who were at sort of the low to average risk, the fact that you had a pretty robust, statistically significant, almost 30% risk reduction was at least a pleasant result, if not a surprising result.
Okay, well, congratulations on these really interesting findings. Can you tell us what this means to the practicing cardiologist? Obviously, this is a retrospective look at a pre-existing database, and it wasn't pre-specified. Nonetheless, the effects are fairly striking. And I think based on what we know about SGLT2 inhibition today, they're probably real. I mean, in terms of this is going to be a way that we treat our patients. Walk me through, if I'm a practicing cardiologist today, do I put all my patients with diabetes on empagliflozin yet, or what's needed to sort of take this forward and get it into practice guidelines?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there are some sort of lessons for both the academic community and then some lessons for the practicing community as well. So first of all, I want to put our results in the context of the patients that were included in the EMPEROR trial. So EMPEROR trial, by definition, was not only diabetes, but diabetes plus vascular disease. So they had either PVD or stroke or coronary disease. So this was not exactly a primary prevention population. There are other studies ongoing for primary prevention population with other SGLT2 inhibitors, so we'll learn about it. But today, first of all, it was in the context of this patient population. I think from a practicing physician perspective, the fact that we are finding these heart failure risk reduction is great. But the primary endpoint for 3-point MACE, I mean, that's what the study, you know, drove the results. So I think the guidelines will start thinking about the diabetes recommendations and start thinking about cardiovascular risk reduction. And I think that will continue to come in front. What the lessons for the heart failure community is that while we get super excited about transplants and VADs and whatnot, we don't necessarily get as excited about prevention. But now two large trials, 35% risk reduction for new onset heart failure. And we know very well that once you develop heart failure, the prognosis are pretty poor, that we should really take the lead in talking about heart failure prevention now that we actually have some tools.
I think these are really exciting and provocative findings. I'm going to ask you to speculate since we have a few more minutes. Do you think that empagliflozin will also be beneficial in non-diabetics? I mean, there are some preliminary data in animal models, but that the drug may actually have direct cardiac autonomous or cardiac specific effects. And I just sort of like to ask you what your thoughts are. I mean, you've thought about this field a lot and have been a pioneer in developing it. So do you think it's only going to be beneficial for diabetics, or is there something else about these SGLT2 inhibitors that we don't know yet?
So you already alluded to some of the basic science literature. If you sort of take a step back and look at the mechanism of action for these drugs, which are pretty varied, so the acute effect of natriuresis and glycosuria, but then you have some weight loss, you have fat loss, you have decreased oxidative stress, you have arterial stiffness reduction. And then if you go further down, you're talking about changes in the myocardial substrate with beta-hydrobutyrate levels going up and free fatty acid. So there's a lot of these things can potentially have effect in the non-diabetic patients as well, who at least have heart failure. There are actually existing data in terms of the non-diabetic patients for natriuretic effect, for glucosuric effect, and for ketogenic effect. So at least for these three, I am aware of the data. Whether for these other things in terms of oxidative stress and fat and weight loss, I personally am not aware of those data, but they may exist. But nevertheless, I think the rationale is convincing enough that now two different SGLT2 inhibitors are being studied in patients with manifest heart failure. We today talked about prevention of heart failure, but for manifest heart failure, and those are naive of diabetes status. They are both diabetics and non-diabetics.
So the take home to our listeners is stay tuned.
Yes.
Okay, Javed, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
This is Alfred Beauvais, editor-in-chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.